been a black boat has been found and is now in the possession of the Army.
Okay, well, let's see what the family is going, okay?
Two of them, and they're acting
fine, both fine, but I'm sorry, like, say that. Oh, my God, I hope that's a plane. Oh, Jesus, please be a plane. Oh, please. Are you ready for this?
Cameraman said, what the hell is that midway across the Hudson River? It was a perfectly circular disc.
For the first time in our history, we're studying something that's studying us.
Nobody told me that the days like
these. Suddenly, something else flew into the frame. Fired, a beam of light struck the dummy warhead, doing a circle, if you can imagine, circling our warhead. Fired another beam of light at it, which struck the warhead.
The Virtually Strange Network presents Strange Days Indeed, your premier source for UFO information, with your host, Errol Bruce Knapp.
Yes, these are Strange Days Indeed, and this program reflects the UFO side of the strangeness. Welcome to program 389. And see, I have a week or so off, and my mouth just does not... No, it never did. It's still doing the same thing. A dysfunctional mouth is the problem. Tonight, Dave Ferlott, Stephen G. Bassett, and Michael J. Woods joining us. And in studio tonight, Victor Vigiani, my co-host. Welcome back, sir.
Greetings and greetings and greetings.
Yes.
Welcome back to you, too.
Thank you. Thank you. Now I need a vacation.
Okay, let's go.
Yes. An interesting week in ufology this week, Victor.
Lots going on, I'll tell you. Although some people may say that things have quieted down on the sightings end of things, there is a lot going on, regardless of how many things are being seen in the sky by people that may or may not be looking.
Well, interesting you bring that up, because I just happen to have here from today's Guardian, out of London and the United Kingdom, an article titled, Whatever Happened to UFOs, by Ian Hollingshead, another informed writer. Hollingshead says, mankind has been spotting strange objects in the sky since biblical times, but it wasn't until the 1940s that terms such as flying saucer regularly appeared in the headlines. And of course, all you people listening out there pretty much know your UFO history after 8 years of this program.
Listening here, sure.
Yeah, on weekends. Footage of an alien on autopsy near Roswell, New Mexico. Big newspaper in the UK in 1947 reached an estimated global audience of 1 billion people before being exposed as a fake only recently. The film of this story, Alien Autopsy, Alien Autopsy, starring people that you and I have never heard of, Anton Deck, opened earlier this month in the United Kingdom. However, it would appear that public interest in UFOs has waned significantly since the 1970s film Close Encounters of the Third Kind suggested that we're not alone. A forlorn statement on the website of the British UFO Research Association, BUFORA, very big in its time, declares that they are scaling down their activities. The halcyon days of ufology are over, explains Chairman Robert Rosamond, bemoaning the effects of dwindling subject material. I don't know what that means. Dwindling subject material. A number of regional affiliates have closed down altogether, some of them blaming the end of the X-Files series for waning interest.
They obviously haven't visited Mexico.
Well, no, and several other hotspots around the planet. Rational explanations appear to exist for most UFO sightings. Even the infamous Rendlesham incident in December 1980 was later blamed on a prank-loving American airman. Really? Kites, soap bubbles, feathers, weather balloons, parachutes, and tumbleweeds have all been mistaken for alien visitors.
I can understand the misrepresentation there, yes.
You can?
I can, yeah.
You're not being facetious or facetious?
Tumbleweeds.
Tumbleweeds. Yeah, well, we've got a lot of tumbleweed blowing around here in the sky, isn't we? UFO enthusiasts have also suffered by association, enthusiasts, I like that, with their fringe loony element. The Flying Saucer Review, which bizarrely claims to have Prince Philip among its subscribers, bizarrely, indeed, has an online article suggesting HIV was brought to Earth by aliens. Doesn't help, does it? A documentary in 2004 reported that flying saucers were actually created by Nazi scientists and sold to the American military. Well, yeah, they were working with round flying aircraft. That's a known fact.
There's not much doubt about that.
Mm-hmm. A more obvious explanation for the fading interest in UFOs is that the craze has simply run its course. The Internet killed it off, and it's been overshadowed by other events. The Internet has also given support to myriad conspiracy theories. So why worry about extraterrestrial life when down here on Earth you can concern yourself with whether MI5 murdered Princess Diana? Remember, this is a British newspaper. NASA staged the moon landings, and Jesus had a bloodline that can be traced to Leonardo da Vinci?
Just as bizarre.
And yet, Bufora's Rosamond remains phlegmatically optimistic about the future of ufology. For every 100 cases, there are 99 rational explanations, he says, but there's always one which confounds the scientists. Today's Guardian out of London, England. The problem is that we have reams of circumstantial evidence, but not one piece of conclusive proof. No one will believe anything until they've seen it for themselves.
Well, proof is proof, and we don't have a whole lot of proof. We've got a lot of evidence, but...
Well, that's the end of the quotes from this article by Ian Hollingshead in today's Guardian newspaper out of London, England. But I have to say, would you believe that in reality, for every 100 cases, only 75 can be rationally explained? And as for hard evidence, let me remind listeners about the strange case out of Australia that Bill Chalker has been investigating, the inexplicably strange hair that Peter Khoury found wrapped around his naughty bit after having non-consensual with a very odd-looking woman. Here's what Peter Davenport of the National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle had to say about the article today. Davenport says he's given up on journalists who elect to write articles like the one that appears in The Guardian today. It appears that they wish to remain awash in a sea of roiled ignorance. Peter Davenport has decided that there's little benefit in arguing with them. They've made up their minds, even in the absence of either information, I've lost my place.
Or analysis.
Or analysis, thank you. It seems a shame that trees are cut down in order to promote this type of prussic tripe. Peter Davenport goes on to say that he should have 650 newly received reports posted to the Newfork site sometime this weekend. He's been delayed in the proofreading process because of a move to new facilities. Catch this. By the end of May this year, Newfork should be comfortably ensconced in a decommissioned United States Air Force ICBM Atlas E missile site silo, located in none other than Davenport, Washington, just 35 miles west of Spokane.
Which proves these are strange days.
Indeed, indeed.
Here with his take on it is Dave Furlong.
There's an interesting thread beginning on the UFO updates list entitled Wake Up Call on Alien Visits. And it comes to us from an article of the same name, written by Stephen Pincock for the Sydney Morning Herald, New South Wales, Australia. Now, I realize that our brethren down under sometimes have to wait for things to reach them, but this article pertains to sleep paralysis being the be-all, end-all reason for the reports of alien abductions. Once again, another noted psychologist, Professor Chris French, head of the Anomalistic Psychology Research Unit at Goldsmiths College, University of London, has come up with this earth-shaking theory, and closes the book on the whole alien abduction concept. And this time, he's even closed the piece about people who were driving at the time. Because instead of merely sleeping in their beds, he claims that our sleep patterns themselves allow us to live in a kind of fantasy world. But I leap ahead of myself here. French and his colleagues wanted to compare the psychology of a group of 19 people who believe they had had experiences of alien encounters and another group of 19 age and gender matched people who had not. The team subjected all the people to tests that measured their tendency to have paranormal beliefs and hallucinations, the ease with which they become engrossed in experiences, and their propensity to enter into altered states of consciousness. On all of those scales, the 19 who said they had experiences of alien encounters scored significantly higher than the control group. In other words, if you have a propensity to be able to daydream, you just might be a candidate for an alien abduction experience. Now, this kind of research is amazing because what it does is answer the question about how someone could imagine being abducted by alien beings and imagining all the intricate details of what they underwent while in the hands of these beings. Professor French states, "We've all seen the X-Files. We know what alien abduction is supposed to be like." He goes on to say, "So people weave together their expectations, their beliefs, and so on into what they convince themselves is true. For people who have the psychological profile he found among his alien experiencers, this may be an easier task than for others." Now, French goes further. He hypothesizes that at least in some cases, childhood traumas such as sexual abuse, physical abuse, or terrible illness may trigger a kind of psychological coping mechanism that allows people to become absorbed in a fantasy life as a way of escaping from unpleasant reality. So, case closed. The people who experience alien abduction suffer from a sleep disorder and or daydream all about their experiences. Oh, and I should also mention that Professor French states, in many cases, those who do acquire memories do so after undergoing techniques such as hypnosis, regression therapy, or guided imagery designed to help them retrieve their memories of these events. And these processes can create memories of things that never happened. That's all well and good, but there are a couple of tiny little problems with the theory. Firstly, how would our good professor explain multiple person abductions, such as Betty and Barney Hill? Did they both experience the same kind of daydream? And how would our learned professor explain cases where someone went missing? And although people searched for the person, they never found that person until days later. Would that be some kind of elaborate fantasy daydream that went on for several days? Oh, and what about the reports from people who never saw The X-Files or any shows like them because those shows were decades away from coming to television? I personally would be very pleased to learn that all the reports of alien abduction are nothing more than people's daydreams or being caught in sleep paralysis, as I am sure that anyone who has ever actually reported being abducted would also like to believe. But unfortunately, the myriad of other things I've mentioned, as well as physical trauma that people have shown evidence of experiencing, doesn't allow for this theory to be the conclusive answer. But that's just my take on it.
Dave Furlong, every week at this time. Strange days, indeed.
Yeah, an interesting take, Dave, as usual.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Do you have a comment, Victor? You rolled your eyes.
Well, no, I think Dave really covered it at the very end that, you know, if the, the number of people that I've worked with who've had physical remnants of activities that they just can't explain, the physical remnants are totally unexplainable. And I don't know, if, you know, you talk about, you know, ligature marks on people's legs and
waking up with sulfuric, sulfur smelling goo all over them.
That's right.
The bedclothes.
Yellow stains on their bedclothes.
Mm-hmm.
With their feet at the pillow and the head at the foot of the bed.
Wearing someone else's night clothes.
That's right. Or wearing their own night clothes inside out.
Mm. And,
you know, this isn't conclusive evidence, I realize that, but too many times this stuff is proffered as put forward by people who have had experiences, and continuous experiences, too, in this regard. So
yeah, that's the other part of it as well, is the fact that it goes, in some cases, it goes on for years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's fine to say, okay, fine, this person might daydream this once, but they're going to do it again and again and again and again.
Yeah, and people like Velez who get taken off the street as they're headed home, right,
mm-hmm.
outside
yeah.
their front door.
You know, these aren't people that are daydreaming or sleeping. These
yeah.
are people that are doing something else, you know, very, very definite.
Driving a car in one direction and having a whole chunk of missing time. And suddenly coming to in their car, driving in the opposite direction, 30 miles from
where they were.
From where they were, yeah.
yeah.
Mm. That makes a lot of sense to me as a rational, sane human being. Yeah, it's a good explanation. Close, but no chocolate cigars.
I don't think so.
Dave Furlott, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next week.
For sure. Good night, Victor.
Good night, David.
Good night, Dave.
This just reminds me of the situation of the people in Oklahoma who spoke with me back in, I guess, 1996 in a motel where we talked about a missing time with a wedding. We can maybe get into it later, but it was just a fascinating experience.
You're a tease.
Well, no, we talked about it before on the show.
Stephen G. Bassett, who continues his wanderings around the United States, joins us on the line. Are you in Colorado, you said, Steve?
Boulder, Colorado.
Boulder, Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to the program.
Good evening, Earl. Good evening, Victor.
Hello, hello.
Stephen Bassett is an observer and commentator on some of the more interesting things that we tend not to consider too often in this UFO field. And what you been up to, Steve?
Heavy stuff. Heavy stuff, fellas. We got a serious hour ahead of us. Let me begin by first saying that the Paradigm Clock website, Paradigm Research Group website, has been redesigned and reintegrated in anticipation of developments in the next few weeks, including the sending out of 30,000 press releases. Those who go there to paradigmclock.com will find the front page, the then page after that, and then the main site to be substantially changed. And I encourage people to go there because we're going to be referring to these sites tonight quite a bit. But when they get to the main page, they will see a much different layout, which includes and shows the extent much more clearly as to what's going on regarding the exopolitical and disclosure developments. They'll see information regarding the Paradigm Research Group, as well as a full list of the PRG projects, as well as a list of collegial projects, recommended books, recommended documentaries. And in the center is more on a blog-like format. They will see developments, and that will play out over time. At all levels, first page, the second page, and the main page, they will see a listing for time change listing. That is, particularly at the main page, paradigmclock.com, up there just for you all tonight
mm-hmm.
as a special treat.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be going there. And the reason it's a special treat is that I'm going to do a little a special for y'all. The Time Change Chronicle, rather the Paradigm Clock, is going to be reset on Monday, April. I guess that's Monday, April 24.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I think I have it down as 23. I'll change that. April 24, and the press releases will begin going out that day, and it'll take about 3 days to get them all out because there's nearly 8,000 that have to go out on this. And I'm essentially going to let you all in early, and we can talk a little bit about this tonight and maybe take some questions. But essentially, the clock is being set to 15 seconds to midnight.
Oh.
And the reason for this is listed in the time change listing. So when they go to the site, they will see that special listing just for them tonight, time change listing. If they click on that, it's going to take them to the main listing that explains and shows why the time is being changed. And then behind the time change listing, and you get to that by clicking on the various times after each item, is the explanations, more deeper explanations for why these items are there. Now, what I'd like to do, if it's okay, is quickly go through these items. I will expand on some of them, but not all. And I do this because, obviously, many of your listeners do not have Internet, and they're not able to view these things real time.
And they get very frustrated, yeah.
And they get frustrated. So I'll give them enough information so they'll understand what's going on here. The last time the clock was set was March 8th of 2004,
mm-hmm.
And it was set at 11:58:45, an hour and 15 minutes from midnight. And midnight, as most of your listeners, I think, know, is disclosure. It's the formal acknowledgement of the extraterrestrial presence by the United States government and or other governments of the world. It is a significant event in human history, to say the least. And it was set at 1:15, and it's been over 2 years now, and the clock's being set. And what I do on this is I show the key things that have happened in the intervening years, in my opinion, PRG's opinion, and then I give kind of as a reference point the impact of those events, whether they moved the clock closer to or further back from midnight, in the amount of seconds. And I'll quickly go through that.
Before you get into it, Steve, just for the people who haven't caught on yet, there is a link to the theparadigmclock.com at tonight's program listing, but let me give that link out for people who are online. Paradigm, that's paradigm, P-A-R-A-D-I-G-M clock, all one word, paradigmclock.com. Sorry, Steve, yes, to interrupt, but we need to, you know, let people catch up with
absolutely
us.
And when they go there, they'll see time change listing right there underneath the logo, the icon, and they want to, that's where they want to go. And if they're deeper in the site, they'll see it again on the second page, and they'll also see it on the main page over in the listed items under Paradigm or PRG Project. Hmm. All right, item number one is President George Bush was reelected. And this, of course, would have been 11-2 of 2004. Mm. And this is important. What is said here is that in another very close election by electoral votes, the American people reelected the most secretive president in American history. During his first term, the sitting president gave no public indication of any kind he was aware of or interested in the question of extraterrestrial presence. More importantly, his policies created a series of crises, and guess what? My computer just debooted, but I'll be back up in just a second. I don't know why that happened, and I'm not going to ask. I don't want to know.
It's because you're on the radio live, Steve. That's
it. It could be.
It happens to us.
Or, you know, I have 14 satellites pointing at me at this point. Okay, more importantly, his policies created great controversy and intense focus by the media on very terrestrial matters such as war, peace, the economy, and scandal. And the effect of this was to move the clock further from midnight by 20 seconds.
Mm.
Item number two, and this goes to let me just back up here. I want to get back into the listing page. All right, item number two is the, and a lot of your viewers know about, listeners know about this. This was the release of information and other matters. It took place at a press conference in Mexico on May 11, 2004, involving the FLIR surveillance videos. This was done with the full approval of the Secretary of Defense, General Clemente Vega Garcia, and almost certainly the Mexican President Vicente Fox. This was a non-trivial event, and it moved us 10 seconds closer to midnight. In July of 2004, producer, director, writer, and actor Dan Aykroyd becomes the first A-list celebrity to allow his or her name and image to be used to support extraterrestrial-related phenomena research. He publicly endorses the Mutual UFO Network. This pushes the clock 5 seconds closer to midnight. And then on September 27th, of 2004, Dr. John E. Mack is killed in London in an automobile accident. I think most of your listeners know who John Mack is. And there's details, again, on the explanation page. And that moves us back from midnight 5 seconds. And then the two X conferences were held in April of 2004-2005. They are the first two conferences devoted specifically to the political implications of extraterrestrial-related phenomena. They were held just outside of Washington, D.C. They attracted considerable media attention, new government witnesses, and launched numerous projects and documentaries. And at the 2005 conference, Corrado Balducci came over. He's a former Vatican official, and he spoke in the United States for the first time regarding his view that the extraterrestrial presence is valid and real and engaging the human race. That moved us 5 seconds closer to midnight, and then on 5:20, that would be May 20, 2005, you had the extraordinary event in which the Brazilian Air Force indicated that they were going to be doing joint investigations with the Brazilian research team of CUB, which is composed of A.J. Gavard and others. This would have also, of course, been done with the approval of the Air Force head of the Brazilian Air Force, and almost, which I think is not, was... let me see if I have the name of that guy. I don't see it handy. Oh, yeah, Brigadier General Carlos Ribeiro. And they also released quite a bit of information and documentation to them. That moved us closer to midnight by 10 seconds. Again, some people that may be new to the show. The Paradigm Clock was created by Paradigm Research Group back in 97, published to the web in 1998. And it was designed to attract attention to the issue of disclosure by creating a similar concept to the Doomsday Clock, which was also created in 1947 by the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of midnight being nuclear war, which is what the Doomsday Clock represented, midnight on the Paradigm Clock represents disclosure, which is the formal acknowledgement of the extraterrestrial presence by the United States government, and first, or in following suit with other governments that have broken ranks. It would be, as we've talked about many times, the most profound secular event in human history, and it's a non-trivial matter with enormous consequences. The clock has been reset many times in that 9 years, and it's about to be reset again coming up on the 24th, Monday. And I'm actually making that change as we speak because I had it down on Sunday, and it's got to be Monday.
Here, Stephen Bassett,
I'm announcing that change,
yeah.
ahead of time for your audience.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the Brazilian event, which was very significant. Brazil has had many significant sightings and other crash events and is very much involved in the UFO issue. And the Brazilian Air Force, by going into cooperation with the UFO researchers down there, all of this, by the way, thanks to enormously to the credit of A.J. Gavard, is very, very significant. Next on the list is... the presentation by Paul Hellyer on September 25 in Toronto, the Toronto Exopolitics Symposium, which obviously Victor and Mike Byrd produced. In that speech, the former defense minister during the 1967 term of Nobel laureate Prime Minister Lester Pearson and also deputy prime minister under Pierre Trudeau publicly states that UFO is as real as the airplanes that fly over your head. Hellyer further states the secrecy involved in all matters pertaining to the Roswell incident was unprecedented. The classification was from the outset above top secret, so the vast majority of all U.S. officials and politicians, let alone a mere allied minister of defense, were never in the loop. He's since gone on, given numerous interviews, and spoke further on this issue, more intensely connecting him to this truth process. That moved the clock 5 seconds closer to midnight. And then on 10-20-06, ISIS, the Institute of Cooperation in Space, requested that Canadian Senator Colin Kennedy, chair of the Senate Standing Committee of the National Security and Defense, schedule public hearings on the Canadian Exopolitics Initiative so that witnesses can take forward. This is all part of ISIS's significant lobbying of the Canadian government and extends further to the lobbying of the United Nations. And this is well-organized, very solid. Alfred Weber is putting everything into this. It's going to have significant impact. It moves the clock 5 seconds closer to midnight. And then, and this is a 206 in general. This is throughout 2006, non-trivial. After several false starts, Air America Radio begins to make headway as a counterbalance to conservative radio, this is in the United States, approaching 100 markets. This is facilitated by access to some stations owned by syndicate giant Clear Channel Communications, chastened in the aftermath of the Michael Powell fiasco at Federal Communications Commission, that being the failed attempt to expand conglomeration of media via new regulations. The effort brought an intense scrutiny of Clear Channel Communications and its business practices. The dominant theme on Air America programs now becomes the consequence of government lying, abuse of power, and excess secrecy are also featured. This has significant impact on the disclosure process in America. It is the first significant radio voice countering the old paradigm processes. It's finally emerged with the help of money and time and needs to get a lot bigger, but it is now, I think, a force, and that moves at 10 seconds to midnight. And then finally, this. Crisis in America. This moves the clock 45 seconds to midnight, or 15 seconds from disclosure, and it reads, based upon an analysis of a multitude of circumstances within and outside the nation, meaning the United States, and upon highly impacting information provided to PRG by an extraordinary, unexpected source, PRG has concluded that America is now facing an unprecedented crisis which has opened a window to disclosure wider than at any previous time. PRG asserts this window will remain open through the November elections and will begin to close after the election, the manner and speed of that closing dependent upon the outcome of the election. PRG further asserts that while an end to the truth embargo is at hand and could occur at any time, this outcome is still very much affected by the ability and will of the research and activist organizations, the general public, and other relevant NGOs, non-government organizations, to maintain a steady and expanding pressure on the United States Congress, the President Administration, aspiring federal candidates, other national governments, and most importantly, the American political media. To recap very quickly, Paradigm Research Group will reset the Paradigm clock 15 seconds from midnight as of Monday based on a list of reasons which are at the website at the time change listing. I have special links up to that listing to make it convenient for anybody tonight going to the site. They will come down Monday. And there you will find the listing as well as an explanation on a backup page to that. And we finished up by indicating that a 45-second component of this is due to the fact that America is in crisis. Let me be real clear about this. The United States right now is in an unprecedented crisis, which I believe is serious, more serious than anything in our lifetime, and I think you have to go all the way back to the Civil War to find anything comparable, and frankly, the Civil War was not as broad, as complicated, or have the ultimate implications to what we're facing now. Cuban Missile Crisis was simply focused on a particular circumstance at the time that relatively competent governance was able to deal with. The crisis during the Clinton administration was laughable, and even the Nixon era was trivial compared to this. I'm going to quickly go through the items here that are the components of this. I will not belabor them. Then you can ask any questions you want, and we'll take this as far as you want and revisit it. Here are the components of this. First of all, there is now an unprecedented breach in the intelligence community, between the intelligence community and the executive office. This breach is extraordinary, and it involves deep disagreements with the government's policies, the conduct of its intelligence affairs, the structure of the intelligence agencies now, and spreads throughout all of the agencies, and poses very interesting and concerning possibilities. But that is accompanied by an unprecedented breach in the U.S. military. There is a major breach in the U.S. military command above the intelligence, in other words, the above black world, standard military world, with the position, future, and policies of the government. Recently, six generals have come forward to speak. They are the tip of the iceberg. There are dozens and dozens of military officers of substantial rank behind them. The disagreements are far and wide. There is also deep concern within the military regarding policies that could bring grave consequences to the United States. These breaches occurring in both agencies, both levels, or both areas at the same time. I don't think it's ever happened before. Nothing even in the Vietnam War compares. In addition, the United States has lost enormous prestige, goodwill, moral position, and political capital around the world, which has dramatically limited our ability to maneuver. First, there is a very high threat risk to the nation, but at the same time, our national borders, and particularly our port access, were never secured. Now, whatever one wants to do to argue about immigration and what's fair and what's not fair, and who's here and who's not here, and that whole morass, which is currently a very big issue in the United States, the fact is at the same time that the threat risk of the United States grew dramatically, our borders are not secure, neither are our ports. The consequences of this cannot even imagine. Detention camps are being built. More detention camps are being built in the United States to accommodate displaced citizens, most likely from a nuclear event occurring in a city, forcing millions in other cities to flee, anticipating same. Another major component is the national debt, which is now off the scale, but matched up with a huge trade imbalance. Furthermore, much of this national debt is now moving in the hands of foreign countries, in particular the People's Republic of China. And the economic success and the military expansion of the People's Republic of China is simply beyond our capabilities right now to deal with. We are in complete confusion about it. In addition, domestically in the economy, we have an unbelievable real estate bubble, which dwarfs anything, any other bubble of any time. It's many magnitudes above the internet.com bubble, the savings and loan bubble. It is extraordinary. In addition, both the Chinese currency and the euro are putting a sovereignty of the dollar, which has been a bedrock of the United States as well as the world economy for a century or longer, at great risk. Furthermore, along with all of this, the citizen trust concomitantly in the Congress, the executive branch, and American media are at virtually unprecedentedly low levels. And the combination of this, in other words, the collective levels of the three at the same time, is staggering and creates great problems. Because we did not deal with the nuclear issue after the end of the Cold War, we did not do the major dismantling and reduction in warheads that should have taken place. We've created worldwide destabilization regarding the potential for nuclear war. This is reflected in the fact that Israel is a nuclear power undeclared. The U.S. will not even acknowledge it. Russia is moving to make nuclear weapons, including new delivery systems, which includes a hypersonic missile that can thwart almost any WMD we have. We are approaching several environmental tipping points, the most major being global warming and the possible release of massive greenhouse gases out of the tundra, as well as other areas. If we pass that tipping point, we are in deep trouble. Worse, the two-party system in America has failed and is no longer able to respond to this crisis. And last, the learning curve of the public, which is very distracted, is way too slow to respond in timely fashion.
So, Steve Bassett, you ran the litany of major problems that are happening in the United States. How does all of that affect the possibility of disclosure with the paradigm clock now being set at 15 seconds to midnight?
I'm going to try to say this as slow as I can because I want to get it across. I'm happy to do this tonight because it's kind of practice. I anticipate I'm going to be having to go through all this an awful lot over the next month.
Okay.
Let me put it this way. You and I and Victor and everybody watching this show tonight are going to die one day. And while some of those deaths may be spectacular and sudden, the vast majority are going to be simply because a whole range of afflictions, the kinds of things that come with age, will eventually overcome what capabilities our immune system has and our cleverness and our resources and our doctors and our medicine can handle, and we will perish. The point is this. Right now, the United States is facing so many crises, internal, external, systemic, social, political, military, intelligence, that it can't. Its resources, its immune system, its degree of competence, and everything else you can draw on to handle it are overwhelmed. And we're facing the prospect of becoming a second world nation, collapsing inward, and becoming a shell of what we were, surrounded by massive nuclear defenses. This would not be good for us, and I can assure you it will not be good for anybody else. And I think that what has happened is enough people inside the government recognize this, that a message is being sent that something dramatic needs to take place. We need a Deus ex machina. Now, it could be God coming down and taking all the raptured home, which is a bunch of plug-in nonsense. It could be the extraterrestrials showing pity on us and coming down and having formal contact and pointing out all these problems and providing nice, neat solutions. Or it could be something a little more appropriate, more logical, and more expected, and that is that we will finally end this 59-year-old charade in which the entire world is told that something of unbelievable importance is not true when it is, and opens up a door into a whole vast array of new possibilities and options and potential solutions, as well as a realignment of worldviews and a distraction, admittedly, from a whole host of problems that technically will not have gone away, but may be open to other interpretations. And that at this point, I think a growing number of people of means and substance, intelligence, resources, and credentials have come to that conclusion, many of them in government. As a result, I think a door has been opened, is being opened for us to slam the disclosure matter home. But be assured that it is not a certainty. This door is not going to be open indefinitely, and there's still plenty of resistance within a government which is in my opinion, chaos. And that chaos is going to get more evident very soon. Keep watching your television and listening to your radio, because I can assure you everything that's been going on now is going to pale in comparison, which is what is coming very soon. Now, the question is, chaos is all fine and dandy as entertainment, but it has unpredictable outcomes. It may be that it leads to a very clever outcome, and we'll all be very happy. It may mean that the chaos will more predictably lead to very unpleasant things. And so, overwhelmed by circumstance, overwhelmed by intractable problems, you know, it took many, many years to build that national debt. I can assure you we're not going to solve it in a couple of weeks. We're not going to solve the border problem in a couple of months. We're not going to solve the trust problem in years. We're not going to solve some of the other policy issues that are underway right now. And if a nuclear event occurs in the Middle East, well, let's just say that we may not be able to solve anything. So the question is, are we going to take advantage of this and go through that door, or are we going to consider and sit back and wait for disclosure to be handed to us on a silver platter by some unknown person, unknown entity, some unknown organization for reasons we can't fathom? Are we going to take matters into our own hands? Are the wealthy going to come forward with money? Are the NGOs going to come together? Are the people that view us as ghettoized, us in the UFO field, as actually being people of substance and responsibility and engage us collegially? Or are we going to stand apart and fall apart? Or do we stand together and prevail?
I think
if the United States falls, I'm telling you, Canada will not be spared.
Well, Stephen, you've brought up a really good opening there with mentioning the Canadian environment. Now, in that context, if the Canadian media were to pick up on and seriously engage themselves with seriously understanding the depth and the credulity of the witness testimony that has been put forward, do you think that this would open the door to and answer a lot of the questions that you're putting forward here tonight to disclosure in terms of the North American, not just Canadian or American context?
Well, the door is already open here. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing. The door has been opened, all right? Now, with respect to Canada, yeah. Why do you think so much effort has been directed up there over the last couple of years? You know the effort has been done.
For sure.
And I don't mean just from within Canada, from within the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go down the list of items that I represented, many of those things do not pertain to Canada. Canada doesn't have a major breach in the intelligence community with the executive or in the military community. Canada doesn't have a massive national debt, a huge trade imbalance. Canada doesn't have a huge real estate bubble, right?
Canada is free of most of these issues. It is a stable country. It has enormous political capital and goodwill around the world. So consequently, without these overwhelming issues freezing it up, because right now the United States is locked in rigor mortis. It is like a deer stuck in the headlights with a 10,000-pound truck bearing down on it with every tick on that deer fighting amongst themselves as to who's going to try to move out of the way, and it's not going anywhere. We're literally stuck in front of this train waiting for it to hit. Canada doesn't have that problem. If Canada wants to move aggressively on disclosure, it could help trigger the events and go through the door. I don't care who goes through the door. I don't care if it's Brazil or Canada or the UK or the Dalai Lama or the head of the UN. I don't care. Somebody's got to go through the door and end the embargo. And if it's Canada, more power to it. But it had better do it damn soon.
And there we need to leave it, Stephen G. Bassett. We'd be out of time.
And well done, Stephen, for sure.
Thank you. Out of time. Yeah. Are you trying to be prophetic?
Well, I thought there might be some sort of dual relational thing going on there. You know, as out of my mouth, I caught myself. Thank you, Stephen. ParadigmClock.com. Go take yourselves a look. We'll talk to you again soon, Stephen G. Bassett.
I suspect we will.
Yes, good night.
Good night.
Our regular space correspondent and the man who watches NASA a lot, Michael J. Woods, is a senior news writer at City TV here in Toronto. Good evening, Michael J.
Good evening, Errol. How are you?
Oh, jolly well, thank you.
Yes.
How goes it with the Mars rovers?
As far as the Mars rovers go, they're the Timex watches of planetary robots.
Take a licking and keep on ticking?
They just keep on ticking. I mean, these things are pretty incredible. They landed up on Mars 2 years ago, January. They've now operated 8 times longer than they were supposed to, which was for 3 months. They've driven more than 4 miles, which is 11 times further than they were supposed to. Together, they've sent back a measly little 150,000 images of Mars. Right now, they're getting ready for winter. It's coming on Martian winter, and the two rovers, Spirit and Opportunity. Unfortunately, Spirit has blown a wheel.
Oh.
Yes, it's gone from a 6-wheeled cart to a 5-wheeled cart, and to get it into position so that it could gather energy to keep itself warm over the winter nights on Mars, they had to treat it like you would an ugly dog, which, of course, you shave its backside, teach it to walk backwards. In this case, because it had a wheel blown out...
Did he say that on radio?
I just did. They made it drive backwards and drag its bad wheel behind it. Now they've got it on an angle in a small crater, and they'll leave it there for the next 8 months. As winter goes through Mars, and they'll just power up and try and keep it warm throughout the night.
My.
Because
yes.
Its last little place before it went for its winter home was a place called Home Plate, where they found, I love this, signs of a long-ago explosion.
An explosion.
Yeah, now that's a volcanic or impact explosion.
Ah.
Yeah, I got really excited when I went, you know, I love how they slide this stuff in on you. Language that's so loaded.
An explosion.
Anyway, it's 4 paragraphs later you find out that it's a volcanic or impact explosion. Still pretty nifty. You know? They were looking at a spot where something came down pretty hard. And guess what? It showed signs of water.
Oh, Kelsey, you know, breeze.
You know, for a desert planet, that sucker was really soggy. You know that. Mm-hmm. I just want to mention that in passing. As far as Opportunity, well, you know about, we've talked about nothing but Spirit here and mm-hmm. 5 wheels. And that's because, of course, Opportunity is just working perfectly, albeit 8 times longer than it was supposed to. It's at the northern hemisphere. And it's rolling its way along towards the Victoria crater where it's going to spend winter. And there's a whole bunch of sedimentary rocks exposed there. That's how it's going to spend its winter vacation.
Oh, very nice.
And, of course, they're hoping that Marvin will come by, do the solar collectors for him like he's obligingly done
several
three times now,
yeah. Anybody get a handle on how that was happening? Are we talking the Martian winds here? But surely Martian winds would bring more dust.
One would accept that. I don't know. You know, Errol, you and I have blue skied on a planet that actually has a pink one. you and I have blue skied this a number of times. I'm really holding out to something in the soil of Mars when it swirls creates an electromagnetic thing. And it's like a static charge that cleans off the...
Yeah.
But that's what I think it is. I think it's just Martian squeegee kids are taking care of the thing for us.
Yeah.
I hope somebody's slipping them some change. On to other things. Now, you know, that's a great success in space, and more to the and to the credit of the designers of the Mars rover, the builders of it, NASA for continually going through the sofas at the visitor centers to come up with enough change to keep the mission running. Because don't forget, they only had funding for 3 months. Okay, now this puppy's been up there for 2 months. They keep going, oh, where are we going to get the money for this? You know, and so they keep going through the sofa there, finding some loose change at the visitor center.
Oh, is that how they're funding it?
I've got to figure, because goodness knows, it's not like Congress throws them enough money to do this. However, you know that I am not a 100% certified cheerleader for NASA.
No, not at all.
In point in fact, I've never understood how an agency, any agency, but especially how NASA could take something like space travel, and more specifically landing on the moon, and make it boring.
Mm.
But they've managed it. And then along the ways, they've had a few moments of less than stellar performance in the whole technology. But it's not like the Americans share the sole place in the Hall of Shame. I mean, don't forget the Russians have provided us with endless amusement with their spacesuits that have rainstorms inside when you're wearing them, which I've got to figure if you're an astronaut, that's just what you don't need. Well, look, Yuri, it's raining in my spacesuit. No, you see, this is not a good day. Well, okay, here you go. So on Wednesday, they decided that it would be really nice if they could boost the old International Space Station up a little bit higher. Because, you know, solar wind and whatnot drags it, reduces it, and then brings it down closer to the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So they got to boost it up. They thought they would fire a couple of long dormant engines that are mounted near a Russian-built docking port on the Vesta module. Now, these pups haven't been fired since July 2000. And they still haven't been fired since July 2000. As NASA spokesman Rob Navy has put it, well, we were all set for it, but the engine's never fired. Now, it's not that big a deal. These are basically a backup to a backup of the prime engines. General practice is when the Russian cargo ships come up bringing up the resupply, you know, water, food, and all that good stuff. Normally, they also add a little extra fuel there, and it kind of latches onto the space station docks, and it sort of gives it a little boost up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just raise it a little bit. This time around, they're just going to nudge it up 0.3 mile, just a hair under 0.5 kilometer, which doesn't sound like much, except if you or I pushing, trying to get it up there, that could be a problem. They figure it was a stuck propellant isolation valve.
Did they manage to clear that?
No, they're not going to do that. They're just going to wait till the Progress 21 arrives and
Yuri,
boost it. Okay, kicking jams. No.
Work it like tug.
Yeah, it's exactly it. You know, the space tug, they'll kick it. But that arrives up on Wednesday. It takes a couple of days to chase it down. We're going to do one last little NASA astronaut-type related note, and a sad one.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to say goodbye to a real pioneer, Scott Crossfield, first man to go twice the speed of sound, Mach 2, first pilot of the X-15, first person to fly an aircraft to the edge of space, acknowledged rival of Chuck Yeager, all-around incredible pilot who helped usher in the space era. Now, he died Wednesday at the age of 84. I hope you take this the right way. I'm happy to say I'm pretty sure he died the way he'd want to in the crash of his aircraft that he was piloting, his personal Cessna.
84 years old?
84 years old. He was flying home. It looks like he ran into some bad weather. Thunderstorms had been active in the area at the time of the crash.
Well, if you got to go, maybe that's the way to go when you're 84 years old, flying home.
This man had his first flight at something like the age of 6, so he was born to fly.
Yeah, he was the X-plane pilot, wasn't
he? Yes,
X-15, there we go.
He flew that first pilot for it, and he was the first person to take her up to the edge of space, brought her up to about 48 miles up in a controlled flight, and then brought it back down.
Yeah.
This is why guys like him at the time sneered at the Mercury astronauts and called them spam in a can. because, of course, they just sat lay on their backs and got fired up there. And,
as long
and,
as it goes up, we don't care where it comes
exactly,
down.
It comes down, that's what happened. You know, precisely. You know, same in a can. You just fire them like a big cannonball, eh? They had no control on going up, coming down, or any other thing. Whereas Mr. Crossfeld, he had to take the X-15, but boom and zoom up to 48 miles, and then bring her back down, put her on the landing strip. So we salute him, and we'll, in our own mind's eye, then we'll fly the missing man formation and do a slow victory roll over the airfield for him.
Yay, Scott Crossfeld.
And that brings us now back to UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought you and I might take a kick at The Guardian and whatever happened to UFOs.
Well, we did that quite heftily tonight.
I know. It's time for me to get my 2 pennies worth.
Oh, okay. And now with his dime on today's
exactly.
Guardian article, whatever happened to UFOs, is Michael J. Wirtz.
And after giving it much thought, having read this on UFO updates, I'd just like to say thank you. No, Chris Radowski?
Rutkowski.
Rutkowski.
I'll say it my way, you say it your way.
Well, I'll mispronounce it, and then you get them right, okay?
Rutkowski. It's good.
His numbers showed a slight decline this year, but only a very slight decline.
Yes.
I consider those definitive.
And we're still only able to explain about 75% of these sightings.
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's much higher myself. I think we can explain about 90% of them. But whatever happened to UFOs, listen, kids, since he can't get any three scientists to talk anything sensible about, like, one of those hot-button topics that had poor old Stephen crawling the walls earlier tonight, global warming, you want to start an argument? Go to any type of meteorologist convention and start talking about it. Is it global warming or a warm-up to the next ice age?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You know?
An interesting, Mike Woods, in the current issue of Fate magazine, which the lovely Phyllis Galdi makes sure that I get a copy of it every month, there's an interesting article on a survey. The article is by Brad Steiger, whom many people have heard of.
Mm-hmm.
It's a survey that was done, and the results were published for and in the Skeptical Inquirer.
Oh, yeah.
By Farah and Stewart, and was based on a national Gallup poll, which was conducted in 2001. What's really interesting is that they have discovered, as a result of this survey, that it's bright, intelligent people who tend to believe more in the paranormal, psychic, spiritual healing, ESP, haunted houses, ghosts, telepathy, extraterrestrials, that kind of stuff, than it is people of, let us say, less education. I guess, really, one has to say it's good that the Skeptical Inquirer had to publish these results.
It looks rather good on them, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of sort of semi-scrambled egg on their faces.
Well, it throws the trailer park image right out of your window, doesn't it?
It does, doesn't it? If you listeners can find yourselves a copy of Fate magazine, it's always interesting reading. The thing that disappoints me about this issue is that they're promulgating the media myth about little green men, because there's a little green guy on the front cover. But other than that, it's a great read. Maybe we can see if we can get hold of Brad Steiger to come on and talk about this, because he has some really interesting things to say.
He's always interesting to talk to.
Probably a quick phone call to Fate magazine would do it. Michael J. Woods, thank you, sir.
You're more than welcome, sir.
And Victor, thanks you, too.
Well,
I'm just sitting back being totally entertained here.
You're supposed to participate, not listen.
Tonight's credits you can go, and in the role of Marcel Marceau, we have Victor Vizant.
Yes.
You say it your way, I'll say it mine.
Oh, yeah, I can't even pronounce my own name. Yeah. It's 11 o'clock at night, that's 4 o'clock my time.
We got to go here, Michael J.
Good night.
Good night, Mike Woods. We shall talk in a week or three. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Thank you to Stephen G. Bassett, Dave Frelott, Jim Pacheco, and well done, Montreal. Like to see those big wins. And to Julian McNabb, Eric Mandelker, Victor Vigiani. Good night, sir.
Good night.
We'll see you next week. Or you'll see us. Or we won't see each other at all.
That's this week's edition of Strange Days Indeed, hosted and produced by Errol Bruce Knapp, the executive...